Right, it is Sean in the chat room. He says, hey guys, I'd sent questions through the email since this chat is closed. If I miss it during work, here's another question. We did answer your other emails yesterday, Sean. Has Michael observed what makes a person's mind be in either right, not right, or wrong, not wrong? Is there anything that makes a mind swap viewing modes?
Yes. What filter is active determines literally what one sees. And that's why Yeshua, when he was asked, what's most important? What's the first law? Now remember that in Aramaic, the word law means the way things work. How do you make it work to function as a human being? And what Yeshua says is you must have Rachma. Rachma is the primary first condition in the mind that must be set for a human life to enter a human form. You'll notice we've got lots and lots and lots of human forms running around, and void of the present and the experience of love, there is no human life in those human forms. Human life, I would offer, is love. Life itself is love moving through a form when we have a human. So the first order of business, in order to have love moving in our form, is this condition of rock. It's a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that allows only information from brain cells that are keyed to love to be used as the raw material forming our goals. Once that is done, then a second filter is activated in the mind called Kuba. And Kuba is the filter over perception that only allows information that is keyed to love that's stored in brain cells to pass. Into awareness to be used in building our personal Kuba together. We're called an Aramaic perfect E, one. Demon kind of thing, it's reality. So that would be primary conditions to produce a true human life and the true presence of love in physiology, our created essence. The alternative filters, as we've talked about previously, are hostility and fear. And so when hostility or fear are active, there are a set of filters over the frontal lobes of the brain, a set of filters over the back of the brain. When Rachma is active, only intentions keyed to love are available. If fear is active, then only negative intentions or information keyed to negativity is available for intentions. And if hostility is active, then only destructive information is available as the raw material for setting our goals. Goals drive the perceptual mind. So if hostility is the quality of the goal, then whatever object of attention, doesn't matter who I'm looking at, if hostility is set in my mind, and we have a saying in this culture that honors this particular principle from the Aramaic, although I don't know of anywhere it's ever been explained as to why. But you notice we've got a saying that says, oh, he got out of bed on the wrong side this morning. What does that mean? His hostility filter set. Doesn't matter what or who he looks at, the most cherished person he's going to find irritating because his perceptual mind is key to irritation. And if the fear filter set, then it doesn't matter who or what he looks at, he's going to experience what's in his mind that's based in threat, his reality, his perceptual construct is going to be based in threat. And so he's going to be threatened by whoever or whatever he looks at. Restore Rachma, and the same object of attention elicits love from that mind rather than fear or hostility. So that would be my best take on that topic. And then, of course, if we find ourselves, I had another question from an individual, so I decided to touch in and go over this particular piece in the dictionary. Let's turn to page here. So, if one is going to clean up one's mind of hostility or fear, the fact that the database that we're working from to build our intentions and perceptions is multi-generational. Many of the dynamics that come up when hostility or fear are active are things that have come from generations and generations, sometimes and generations ago. You know, people say, you know, well, when I did that behavior, I didn't feel like myself. I felt like something took, you know, the person who's standing in front of the judge that says, what did you do? You've got a good reputation. What happened? Or says, I don't know. I didn't feel like myself. So it was like something took me over. Yeah, something took him over. Something of a generational pattern. And accessing, especially in our culture with the kind of outward focus, you'll notice that, you know, right from day one with the little child, what do we tend to do? We tend to get them to look at shiny things. We make funny faces. We make funny noises. We show them things that grab their attention and keep them outward focused. Who teaches a child to go within? One of the practices we've been doing with Arya Rain. She now will lead us in a meditation. We tell her it's time for a meditation. So it's my turn to do it. Okay, close your eyes. Take a deep breath. And relax. And she'll guide us into meditation. But the world tends to keep us focused out there. And so we develop all kinds of skills for experiencing out there. But when it comes to moving in here, inside, well, most people just don't have the skills because they've never been taught it. This work is about that. And how do we clean up some sort of horrific thing that happened maybe 10, 20, 30 generations ago and has been impacting the bloodline over and over and over with that traumatic energy? What do we do with that? Well, Yeshua gave us a tool of forgiveness. And forgiveness is a totally and completely different thing than our culture has taught us. Our culture has taught us that, well, if my mind is accessing some sort of unresolved trauma from within its database, and building me a perceptual construct based in trauma that I can now easily blame somebody else for because I was trained to be a member of the one world universal religion of blame by the time I was four. My mind out of my trauma builds a trauma bat, puts all of my trauma into my brain's image, and I really think they're the cause of my trauma. Now there's a smelly line that comes to mind when I say those words. How long has this been going on? Generation after generation after generation. Look at that story of the Jews wandering in the desert. They got lost in this hot, this 35 square mile hot sandy place for 40 years. Now, if you believe that's a true literal story, I have a bridge for sale. I mean, it's a silly concept to think that this group of people, who obviously are very bright and know a whole lot about astronomy, they've written a lot about it, that they could possibly get lost in a 35 square mile area and not have any idea how to get out. that have any idea that, oh, the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. We know we want to go west, so let's follow the sun. Doesn't take many days to get out of a 35-square-mile area. This is not about a hot, sandy place. What did they say had to happen to get out of the desert? The desert, which is a code word for the unconscious. What they said was the old generation had to die off. Now, to the root of the word generation is genare. It means cause. It doesn't mean everybody in old physical bodies had to physically die. It meant that we had to go in and deal with the causes in our minds that were based in trauma. And you say, well, gee, Michael, you told me about this research from Harvard that says that in a frame where 10,000 brain cells are firing, the max amount of data that comes into conscious awareness is 9 bits of data. And you tell me that I've got a multi-bit database. How am I ever going to clean a multi-trillion bit generational, multi-generational database doing it 9 bits at a time? Well, I'll tell you what, you're never going to do it that way. It's not going to happen. And there is an elemental force that 2,000 years ago Yeshua taught was within us. And remember that our study with this Enlightenment book is to develop new brain cells to be able to see through Aramaic eyes. And you recall that in the early days, as we talked about the fact that there were certain words that were left in Aramaic because either there was so much confusion in the current understanding, or just there was just no such concept. So what Yeshua taught about is the fact that there is a feminine elemental force in us that when invited into activity will undo the effects of our errors and teach us the truth. What might the effects of our errors be? Well, when you realize that you are an energetic being, and if the energetic patterns in you have invited person after person after person after person to come in and attack you and created all kinds of crazy stuff in your relationships because being attacked, you were a member of the One World Religion of Blame, so you blamed the person who attacked you for what was coming up in you instead of stopping and going, oh, this person's attacking me. That's brought something up in me, this rage, this fear, this terror, this trauma. I think I'll go in and clean up my fear, my rage, my terror, and my trauma. I think I'll go into my desert, again, into my unconscious, and clean up all of the generations. All of the patterns. So Yeshua handed a tool called forgiveness, a tool with which you go within yourself and remove what it belonged. And then he taught about an elemental force that in Aramaic was called Ruka Tekutcha. So this Ruka Tekutcha is one of those concepts we need to build a whole new set of brain cells for. We need to come into a different understanding. So, short form, Ruka Tekutcha is feminine, literally a force for that which is divinely intended for man, the third unit of the Trinity. And then what I'm going to do, if you've got the text and you want to follow along with me, then go to page 92 and we're going to look at Ruka Tekutcha. So, editor's note, Ruka Tekutcha, another symbol left in the original Aramaic sound, usually it's translated as the Holy Spirit, not because the literal meaning is not available, but because the degree of confusion of the concept illustrated. So it's left in the original Aramaic. The sound triggers the action part of Alaha that, according to John 23, must be worshipped. Worship here being to emulate. It is the Parakleta, which literally means she who breaks off the effects of error and teaches truth, and is to be all-embracingly cherished and trusted. So if we read John 14:26, or she who breaks off the effects of doings which are unfit is Rukut Kudsha. She, my Abbe, which would be Father, will send through me. She will instruct you on all matters. She will remind you of all that I have said unto you. In other words, there is literally this helper inside. It's like you've got an internal therapist there to assist you. And most people, again, my take being that from the very beginning, because we've been focused out there, most everybody's looking for out there. Oh, the problem's out there, the solution's out there, the person who can fix me is out there, and on it goes. Interesting, someone posted on my Facebook page the other day, and it had all the different religions. And it talked about, you know, how so-called Christianity, 1,000 years for the return. And this one's been waiting for the return of Muhammad for 1,400 years. And this religion's been waiting for the return of their Messiah for 2,000 years. Everybody's looking out there, oh, when's it going to happen? Yeshua said, no, 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 it's within you. For she who breaks off the effects of things which are unfit is Rukut Kudsha. She, my Abbe, will send through me. She will instruct you on all matters. She will remind you of all that I've said unto you. So Rukut Kudsha is a feminine word. That is, it's gendered feminine in the Aramaic. You know, if you're familiar with, say, for instance, the French language, we've got L-E and L-A. One and genders whatever you're looking at, like a table. I forget. You know, my French is very rusty. But I think it's L-A, gender feminine is a table, and the car is L-E. However that goes, but it indicates whether the word is gendered feminine or masculine. So in Aramaic, Rukut Kudsha is gendered feminine. So the pronoun she was normally used to refer to Rukut Kudsha until the time of Constantine, when the church was massively restructured to support the imperial agenda of oppression and patriarchal superiority control. The beauty and effectiveness of Rukut Kudsha, and I'm going through this so we have the brain cells. Remember, we talk about when these words are left in the original Aramaic, the idea is there's a whole new sense, a whole new understanding. And oh, if you ever read the book Stranger in a Strange Land by Robert Heinlein, you have to grok it differently. So these words are an attempt to assist each person to get a deeper experience and sense of what this elemental force is. So the beauty and effectiveness of Rukut Kudsha is testified to by the very fact that while Constantine tried to pervert the church beyond recognition to oppress people, with time Rukut Kudsha brought the church into triumph over oppression. Ancient symbolic pictures from Egypt, South America, and elsewhere depict the use or action of four elemental forces in the creation of the universe. Humanity, augmenting its senses with all manner of devices, has yet been unable to sense or perceive any of these four forces. So you remember that Yeshua spoke of the wind when he gave an example of Rukut Kudsha, a force that they had at least some understanding of. He was introducing something that people just didn't grok. So and today, still, unfortunately, it's been lost. These four, or at least to a great degree, been lost. These forces are said to have been used with the action of Rukut Kudsha to create the physical universe and life. For instance, it is well known that the stars are expanding outward at a tremendous velocity from a central point of beginning, despite billions of years of gravitational attraction opposing their outward rush. Some immense originating expulsive force was needed to initiate, their outward journey. creative mind, using creative devices, has been able to sense such uncreated. But creative force, we can only observe the fact that it exists from the results it produces. And we now know that instead of just a Big Bang, the universe coasted to its present condition, there's a continual increasing expansion, indicating an ongoing active expanding force. After the originating expulsive force, the coalescing action of gravity acted on the originally expulsed material to bring individual units together. As with expulsive force, this gravity force cannot be sensed directly by humans' minds, nor by devices. It's interesting to note that the phrase forever and ever, or from age to age, is more accurately translated from Aramaic as from cosmic gathering to cosmic gathering, implying the Aramaic-speaking people were familiar with and accepted the concept of a massive dispersal of the universe and subsequent gravitational coalescence. And they recognized this more than 2,000 years ago. However, in contrast to modern theory, they understood this expansion and coalescence to be cyclical. The third force appears to operate in the physical area, untied the sensing equipment of humanity, and is something associated with nuclear forces. It appears to be to prevent the orbiting electron, and we've covered this before, but it fits here again for building brain cells for this comprehension of this idea that just isn't expressible in English. From joining with the nuclear particle, the hydrogen atom, despite the electromagnetic attraction of their opposite electrical charge, this attraction is the origin or the engine of chemistry and chemical reactions. When detected, there is no doubt as to the existence of this force. Regardless of how much we calm the activity of the hydrogen atom by freezing it, by cooling it, or how many electrons we load upon it, or how much we squeeze it, the nuclear particle refuses to accept an additional electron, and the atom remains hydrogen, basic unit of matter. It is widely agreed that this dark energy constitutes about two-thirds of the entire universe. Almost all of the remaining one-third is so-called matter, which continually pops into and out of existence. Less than 5% of the total universe can be detected and observed. Dark energy, matter, is therefore the vast majority of the universe. The universe, which for all practical purposes, to us, is not there. That part of the universe doesn't seem to be there. Our senses cannot achieve contact with it directly. We can only know it by the effects it creates, and that's the idea here of recognizing that Rukhitakutsha will be known to you by the effects she creates if and when you invite her into activity. Otherwise, it'll seem like it doesn't exist. It seems reasonable that if what we call real is in fact less than 5% of the universe, we may want to consider something seemingly unreal as to what the universe is all about. Humanity cannot directly contact these forces. We can only sense their impact in a limited material universe that we think is quote-unquote real. Excuse me. The invisible forces are Rukha and have been inadequately translated as wind, breath, spirit, or pneuma. As Rukhitakutsha represents in Aramaic, Alaha, which is the invisible, unknowable source of creation. Alaha's immeasurable force upon the mind of humanity in creation, a fourth force which humanity can receive into its nafsha. In other words, we can, if we choose to become aware of it, experience the impact and effects of this feminine elemental force in us. So it can be received, but cannot be perceived. The Aramaic symbol kudsha is the Aramaic ancestor of the Hebrew word kosher. What kosher means proper is delineated by the five books of Moses. Kudsha is a broader and means proper as determined by or in harmony with the laws of oneness of humanity, whether known or unknown. It represents that which is divinely intended for humanity. Rukudakudsha has many distinct but cooperative aspects which initiate a variety of actions. The actions are not Rukudakudsha, but rather the result of Rukudakudsha. These actions include life and communication from Alaha to human intelligence. So there is a telegraph line, an elemental force from which we can receive truth directly. And the whole objective of this work, the whole objective of what I've been doing for the last 50 years, is to give people the tools to get their bloated nothingness out of the way, as one writer wrote, and make contact with this elemental force. Yeshua himself said, you can deny me, no big deal, but not the one I came to connect you with. So these actions are not Rukudakudsha directly, but the result. And we can observe this force by the result. This latter action correlates with Carl Jung's universal conscience. Jung describes this as an all-pervasive web of interconnectedness between the divine and the worldly. Rukudakudsha functions as a transmitter and communicator of Allah's laws for humanity. John 14:26 states, she will instruct you in all matters, and she will bring you into your minds all that I have said to you. If we listen to Einstein, and we could say this, you know, recognize this as the unifying force. He says, if you think you are separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. But we've cut off ourselves from direct experience of these elemental forces, and most of us live in constructs of our minds, which are nothing but reflections of the energy that's gone before us, that's stored in our carbon-based memory systems within this, what was called the red clay, Adam Adamos, the red clay. And the red clay, if you asked a physicist to break it down and tell us what its base element is, they would tell you that its base element is carbon. And a carbon atom has 6 electrons, 6 protons, 6 neutrons. You might recognize that has meaning. Where is the, you know, most people are looking out there somewhere. The Antichrist is coming. Where is this anti? There is a mind of designed to be connected with love 24/7, 365, designed to enhance your ability to live in and out of, pardon me, in and as love for all of eternity, what we're designed for. And what do? Well, when we come into the world and the world starts to outer direct us to our senses in the outer world, to the 5% of what, you know, at least they theoretically believe exists. What we call the material universe makes up about 5%, the other 95% dark matter. So if our senses have been tied into the 5%, what have we done with the other? And the objective here is to recognize that this elemental force resides within us, and it can overcome that optical delusion, perceptual construct that comes from carbon-based memory. That mind can be quieted, and when that mind is quieted, then we enter directly into the mind of active present love, which literally has contact with all things throughout all space in all time. And as Yeshua described it, will bring to mind that which I have taught you. So, I thank you for the question that opened things up. Because that question, much appreciated, Sean, ties right in with the conversation I had with someone who was asking about Ruach HaKodesh and how it all fits together. So, if we want to clean up this multi-generational database, how do we do it with a 9-bit mind, with perception? It can be done. But there is this elemental force in us which literally will undo the effects of our errors and teach us the truth. So that's where we want to go with all of this, and I hope that fits and makes sense. And if it leaves anybody with any thoughts or questions, please, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, the calling number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you're listening to the show directly, and then if you have a question or thought for us, push 1. And that will raise your hand in the control panel, and we'll be having a conversation.
Michael, we do have...
So, Miss Jeannie, I think I heard you. Go for it.
We do have 2 hands up, but we had a question in the chat on Podbean. And she says, I know I've already asked this, but I must have blocked the answer. How do I forgive thinking about my nephew who is a liar? So it's not forgiving her nephew, but forgive thinking about her nephew. And then she goes on to say,
okay, so,
I don't want him to lie.
Okay. So as Jeannie just said, we're not going to ever suggest that you forgive your nephew for being a liar. But we're going to suggest that you apply forgiveness inside of you to begin to deal with the part of you that holds that idea and whatever the disturbing energy is about lying. So, remember that the most successful distraction in history is blame. It's a brainwash has become virtually universal. And again, most everybody by the age of 4 is a full-fledged, devout, card-carrying member of the One World Universal Religion of Blame, and most of us have no idea how we got that way. And we've each been taught to believe the graven images, the pictures that show up in our mind, constructed by our mind, and we think that that picture, which is a construct based on what's resonating in us, and that picture is painted on the inside of my eyeballs, and the feelings, the emotions, the energies that move with that picture, I've been taught, are caused by somebody out there. Our offering is, they're not caused by somebody out there. What you're experiencing is what's moving inside of you. So, when we don't understand these constructs are internally generated, the disturbance, the upset, is internally generated. And it's not what's happening in the world, but reflect first and foremost the dissociative content of our own mind. That's why I'm in disturbance. You know, if I confront somebody who's a liar, I look and I go, oh, they're a liar, and I go on with my day. But if I look at somebody and go, oh, they're a liar, that's my content. Notice, to tap into that, to go to that kind of energy, my body has to tighten, my breath has to change. That's an internal construct. And yes, I paint it on the inside of my eyeballs, and I think I'm looking out through my eyeballs, so I think I'm looking at something out there. But what I'm looking at is the dissociated content of my own mind. And the primary work to be done, if you're going to reach a state of serenity, is to access and forgive or remove that disturbed content of your own mind. And, you know, probably one of the greatest atrocities done to us as human beings down through the ages, and that we bought into, is that we've had hidden from us the fact that we are by nature creators. And if you notice the way life is showing up, that's your creation, including your nephew. When you recognize that, then you'll see that this is your next piece of work. And that work is your healing. If you blame your nephew for your response to his lies, or at least what you perceive to be his lies, then you're dissociating from what's coming up in you, and you miss your own healing opportunity. So my suggestion would be that you put his name on a worksheet in number 1C, and then you start in number 1A, I, and you write your name in and be really clear who you are as love. Am feeling what? Am I feeling sadness? Am I feeling anger? Am I feeling fear? What's going on for me? What's resonated in me? What's triggered in me that I'm in a disturbed state? Now, my mind tells me I'm in that disturbed state because he lied. But I'm not in that disturbed state because he lied. I'm in that disturbed state because I have that quality of disturbance in me. And if I ever want to be finished with that quality of disturbance, you'll notice, and of course I haven't asked you the question, but you'll notice this isn't the first time you felt this quality of disturbance. And if you never forgive it, it won't be the last. So you go through the reality management forgiveness process, and you remove from your mind that disturbed energy that's moving in you. Once you clean that up, you'll come back to your nephew, and you might be shocked to find that all of a sudden he's changed and he doesn't lie anymore. Or maybe he's not going to change, maybe he's never going to change, and he'll continue to lie, and you'll just stand at a centered, connected space of love when you're in his presence, because there's no disturbance left in you about being lied to or about lying. So that would be my offering, going through the forgiveness process until you're free of whatever the disturbing response is in yourself. Once you do that and you stand in the space of your nephew as the presence of love, the tendency will be for his behaviors to change. But, you know, there's only 2 square feet that you can change in there, your own. And so that would be my answer. That would be what I would suggest that you do. Now, you can take literally every other tool that we have and apply it as well. But the primary one I would offer in this case would be to apply the forgiveness process to literally access the disturbed energy in you that seems to be about him lying, but is really just a disturbed energy in you that when you're free of it, you're going to be healthy, more vital, more alive, and more serene. So that would be my input on it. If you have any other thoughts, go ahead and put them in the chat, and Jeannie can share them with us.
In the meantime, let's get our caller.
Awesome.
Area code 734. I believe this is Melanie. We haven't heard from you in a while. Welcome.
Hi, can you hear me?
You're loud and clear. Welcome, Melanie. Good to hear your voice.
Hi, I don't know how you remember me. I recently, I have a couple questions. Earlier you were talking about Luca Dukusha, and I'm wondering if there's anywhere like on your website or somewhere where I can access more information about it. I couldn't really hear you that well because there's a lot of background noise, but I've been wondering about that myself.
Okay. Is there a lot of background noise coming from the show, or are you somewhere where there's background noise?
I'm in a noisy bedroom, and I have a three-year-old running around, so...
Oh, okay. Okay, I understand. Well, one, when the show is over, you can go to our website, whyagain.org, and in the middle of the homepage, you'll see a link with a picture of a microphone, or you'll see a picture of a microphone. If you click on that and drill down, you can download and listen to today's show, so you can listen to it again. There is a section on the website on the Aramaic, and or if you are interested in getting a copy of the book, you can order that as well, the book that we're working with.
What
I'm not sure offhand. The book we're working with is called Enlightenment. It's what we've published so far from the Caloris manuscript. And the Caloris manuscript is a copy of the oldest known New Testament in its original Aramaic language, translating into English. Enlightenment is what we have published so far from that text. If you go to our catalog on our website, you can order the book, and it's $25 plus shipping. With the radio show, if you just order without going to our catalog, because the catalog, the website automatically adds shipping, there's nothing we can do about that. But if you want to order the book, we'll pay the shipping. If you just go to our website and down at the bottom of the page, there's a donate button. And if the book sells for $25, PayPal, which your payment goes through, takes a dollar and change out of it. So if you just donate $26, we'll pay for the shipping and get it off to you. If you decide to do that, go to whyagain.org, go to the bottom of the page, hit the donate button, put in $26, and then give us your name and your address, and it's for Enlightenment, and we'll get it shipped off to you right away.
Okay, thanks.
I will also.
I also wanted to ask. It might be a stupid question, but you've been talking about healing generational trauma, and I had an experience this morning that warranted doing a worksheet, and I kind of feel like I'm wasting my time when I go through a single worksheet when I kind of already know. Maybe not the exact original experience that caused the trauma that it's resonating, but I guess...
Breathe.
I mean, I know. Yeah, right. You just told that one lady to continue doing worksheets until you're free of the disturbing response in yourself. And I know I don't take a lot of time to do that because I don't feel I have enough time, but...
I hear you.
Wouldn't it be more, I know that's an excuse, but that's just how I feel sometimes. Wouldn't it be more productive
with a 2-year-old, I understand, Melanie.
Wouldn't it be more productive to do like the original worksheet first? Like a worksheet from when you were a kid or when you were young? Or?
Well, you know, any situation or circumstance that you're aware of that relates to what's going on for you, whether it's when you were 2 years old or, you know, I've had people do worksheets on memories they had from being in the womb. So yes, whatever time frame that you're in touch with, or that kind of a memory, and in fact, you know, let's say, for instance, sometimes, let's say there's a situation, especially with you being a mom with a young baby, oftentimes things will come up with, you know, one's own parents, mom or dad. And, you know, we'll suggest to somebody, okay, so do the worksheet around that situation. And then, if they're not resolved, one of the things we'll oftentimes say is, so now, imagine that you are, you know, let's say the interaction was with dad. Imagine that you are dad, and you do a worksheet as your father around that same situation. That can open up wide vistas of what needs to be healed. And one of the things that, you know, I'm very aware of with having developed this process and been doing it for years with people is that there'll be times when you'll do, you may have to cancel a goal 10 times in a minute, i.e. do the equivalent of 10 worksheets in a minute, because the intensity of what's moving. And then you may hit a plateau where, gee, you know, I've done 20 worksheets on this in the last 3 weeks and it just isn't moving. And then all of a sudden, bang, that next layer starts to move. And it's just, you know, when you recognize the generational nature of these traumatic patterns, it's doesn't always follow any rhyme or reason as to how quickly it resolves, how long it takes to resolve, or when it gets resolved.
Okay. If you do a worksheet as a parent, would you do the worksheet like channeling their personal experience of a traumatic experience, or a worksheet perpetrating something against you, or
what I've done when I do something like that is I'll imagine that I'm with them and breathing into their space, and I imagine that I am them. I ask permission. I imagine I am them, and I do that worksheet on exactly the same situation as I just did the work on for myself. Now, that might be a worksheet that I do, you know, I, as my mother, might do a worksheet on me as her son. I, as my mother, might do a worksheet on her relationship with her mother. That seems to be the thing that impacts us. Again, any variety of things that come to mind that seem apparent at this moment as impacting the situation can be appropriate for doing a worksheet. And when you realize the generational influence, and with a child of two, there would tend to be the resonance of, I think, more of that generational stuff, then certainly patience with the process is a requirement, because I don't know when it's going to unfold. I mean, I can think of issues in my life that I have worked on for decades and seen resolution happen over the decades that just didn't seem available originally when I worked on those things. And and for me, my best understanding of that is those are the patterns that are so deeply embedded in our genes and our family history that, you know, nobody's going to pull them out and be done with them in one particular session.
Then what do we do about our children? Like, do we have to do worksheets for them too? Because they have
if you go to, absolutely, you know, one of the things, our granddaughter is five, and we talk with her about forgiveness all the time, and we talk with her about the tools. The first year and a half or so, every day when I did the radio show when she was here, and that was usually 2 to 3 days a week, it was her nap time when we were doing the radio show, and she'd be laying on the crook of my arm while I'm doing the radio show with the headset on, listening to it. And we talked to her about it. There was an interesting, you know, event that happened just a few weeks ago with Jeannie and Aria. And Aria had some stuff going on, and all of a sudden Aria brought one of her dolls to Jeannie and explained that the doll was having trouble and asked Jeannie if she would help her to work through it. And then sat there while Jeannie verbalized walking through a worksheet with her doll.
But did she do a children's worksheet or a regular one?
Well, we'll have to ask Jeannie that. I don't know.
I would
imagine that she probably watered it down to the level of experience where Ari would do it, but I wasn't physically present for that. Sweetie, if you want to share that.
Yeah, I didn't have an actual physical worksheet with me, but she said her doll was sad. And so talked to the doll, and of course Ari is sitting there listening to every word, but I addressed everything to the doll. And I said, well, you know, I know that you're sad, but, you know, and what you're thinking is that you wanted this toy and it was broken, but you know that you've got, and I just kind of walked her through, and I said, so we have to cancel our goal for that doll to, or the other toy to not be broken. And just, you know, look at all the other toys you have, and, you know, you can be happy. You don't have to, you know, feel sad. And just kind of walked her through, and So then when we got finished, I handed the doll back to Aria, and Aria said, well, she's still a little sad, but she feels better. You know, and but Aria has also learned that, you know, what we say, and a lot of times, you know, our words are not really what we want. Like if you say, don't fall down the steps, the focus is still on falling down the steps. And so, you know, we say, well, cancel that thought because we don't really want that to happen. And she has gotten to where she told us that her classmates wouldn't cancel their thoughts. And she said, so I cancel them for them. So if she hears a child say something about, you know, I'm going to fall, then Aria will say, well, you need to cancel that thought. You know, and so she's teaching them, even though they don't understand what she's doing. And so she's getting it. She's just five, but she's getting it that, you know, it's her goals that is the cause of the upset, and that if she cancels the goal, that the upset will go away, that our emotions are attached to our thoughts. And I did send you an email with a whole bunch of information about what Michael just read, and then also about Rock Makuga. So you'll have an email from me on that.
Okay, thank you. I just noticed that Sam, especially, he has issues or focuses on things that are resident of, I feel like, you talk about generationally inherited trauma, I think it comes from me because I almost feel like I know exactly what why he has that perception.
Right.
And he used to really have this book for a while, but I don't have it anymore, but, I don't know, that's really good that you have instilled that in the little girl for her whole life.
Melanie, if you go to the website, if you go to the website and click on Start Here, I'll send you that link directly to it too, but all of Julie's worksheets are on the website, so you can download just the worksheet.
Okay, thank you.
Also, if you go to your app store on your phone and type in Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, you've got the app.
Yeah, I have it. I don't feel like it's my actual worksheet, but...
Okay. Well, you might just check the game as a way to introduce kids to it. And also, if you decide that you want to order the Enlightenment book, Julie's book is also $25 plus shipping if you order from the app, or pardon me, from our store. But if you decide you want to order the one, if you want to, and Julie's book sells for the same thing, and if you want to just do a donation of $52, we'll pay the shipping for both of them and ship them to you if you decide you want to do that, so it won't be that shipping charge involved. So you'll have that book back in hand again.
Okay, thank you.
Cool. Delighted. And we're here to support you the best we possibly can, and it's a delight to hear your voice.
You too. Take care.
All right, blessings. All right, bye-bye. Hi, Miss Jeannie, we've got another hand up.
Well, we did, but he dropped it back down. I believe it was Dusty, area code 904. You're on the air.
You still with us, Dusty? I heard something kicked in, but not quite there. Is your mute button on, Dusty? If you're saying anything, I can't hear you. Okay, I think we must have lost him, Gene.
Okay.
And we've got about three minutes left, so time for... Go ahead, Gene.
I was just going to say, you've got 3 minutes.
Yeah. So if anybody's got a quick question we can get into, that would be awesome.
And the person on...
If not, then I'll just share that...
The person on Podbeam said, yes, that helped. Thank you. And we did have a question, but I don't know that you've got time to get into it. And they were in Podbeam, and I did answer them in the chat room. But they wanted to know what they could do to get rid of the fear that they have about ghosts, spirits, and shadows.
Mm. Well, you know... All of the above would be my answer to that one. I mean, you could use every tool. Your fear is not about ghosts, spirits, and catalyst, your fear is just about the fact that there's fear. And so the trigger that activates it is the idea of ghosts, shadows, what have you. And so my input would be to start doing some forgiveness work around fear itself and make sure that you breathe. You know, fear changes the whole pattern of energy flow throughout the body. It leaves people in a state of what's called sympathetic dominance, which compromises blood flow to all of the faculties of the brain, to the functions of rest and digestion, and it shunts, literally, physically shunts blood to the larger muscles of the arms and the legs to get us ready to fight or run, and to the lungs to enable us to take in more oxygen so we can fight or run. But virtually everything else in the system is compromised here. And so my input would be to really seriously sit down and do some really serious work on that fear and start moving it out of your structure. And the forgiveness would be the primary tool that I would suggest using that reality management worksheet. If you don't have, just type in the words Heartland, H-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic forgiveness, and you'll see an app with a glowing heart come up in the list. Download that one, and you've got the worksheets right there to go work and work with letting loose of that that fear. And in the meantime, we'll be holding the space for the healing of it and the willingness. And we'll invite everybody on the show into the willingness to do another level of work on letting go of fear. And we breathe with you. Hold you in the blessing. Everybody, thank you for joining us. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give.